There is a God. How the World's Most Notorious Atheist Changed His Mind. Anthony Flew. Harper 1, 2007. 222 pages. A brief book summary from Books at a Glance. About the author. Anthony Flew was the world's leading philosophical proponent of atheism during the second half of the 20th century. He lectured around the world and wrote many seminal works about atheism and the existence of God. After 6 decades of defending atheism, Flew came to believe that reality pointed to the existence of a creator God. Flew passed away in 2010. Introduction. Anthony Flew was a giant in academic philosophy during the 20th century, and his most famous and original philosophical contributions involved a trenchant defense of atheism. Flew not only critiqued theistic arguments, he analyzed the concept of God and the methodology of theism in ways that had never been done before. His original thought set the agenda for much of philosophy of religion during his career. Always striving to be Socratic and to follow the evidence where it leads, over his 6 decades of defending atheism, Flew continued to study and analyze evidence for the existence of God. In 2004, he acknowledged that he had come to believe in the existence of God. The evidence for a creative mind behind the universe was too strong to be rejected. This book traces Flew's personal journey from being the world's leading atheist philosopher to a believer in a divine being. He describes the pathway of his life and then details the evidence and arguments that led him to change his mind about the existence of God. Table of Contents. Preface. Introduction. Chapter 1. The Creation of an Atheist. Chapter 2. Where the Evidence Leads. Chapter 3. Atheism Calmly Considered. Chapter 4. A Pilgrimage of Reason. Chapter 5. Who Wrote the Laws of Nature? Chapter 6. Did the Universe Know We Were Coming? Chapter 7. How Did Life Go Alive? Chapter 8. Did Something Come from Nothing? Chapter 9. Finding Space for God. Chapter 10. Open to Omnipotence. Appendix A. The New Atheism. A Critical Appraisal of Dawkins, Dennett, Wolpert, Harris, and Stenger by Roy Abraham Varghese. Appendix B. The Self-Revelation of God in Human History. A Dialogue on Jesus with N.T. Wright. Notes. Summary. Chapter 1. The Creation of an Atheist. Anthony Flew's father was a Methodist preacher and tutor at a Methodist theological college. From his father, he learned the importance of gathering evidence, careful analysis, and drawing logical conclusions. Ironically, this method of critical intellectual investigation led Anthony to abandon his father's faith. Traveling in Germany with his family during the years leading up to World War II, Flew was exposed to anti-Semitism and totalitarianism. Being exposed to this evil made believing in an all-loving God very difficult for him. At boarding school, by the time he was 15, Flew had rejected the idea that God existed and frequently debated the subject with other students. He did not, however, tell his parents of his atheism. They found out when he was 23. Flew finished his undergraduate degree at Oxford with first-class honors and progressed into further academic studies and teaching in philosophy. Taking his graduate degree under famed philosopher Gilbert Ryle, Flew continued to see the importance of following the evidence to where it leads, and also of having personal discussions with those who disagreed with his conclusions. He spent time at meetings of the Socratic Club, a place where Christians and atheists gathered to read papers and debate their positions. It was led by C.S. Lewis for many years. The one paper that Flew read at the meeting, Theology and Falsification, was a response to logical positivism and is one of the most widely circulated philosophy papers written in the 20th century. As an academic, Flew spent his career teaching in universities in the UK, Canada, and the United States. His main publications were in philosophy of religion, especially in setting up frameworks for disbelieving in the existence of God. For decades, Flew was the leading philosophical proponent of atheism in the Western world. Chapter 2. Where the Evidence Leads. Flew's initial research interest was in psychical research, today referred to as parapsychology. He was also interested in the implications of Darwinianism for social progress and Marxism. During the 1940s and 1950s at Oxford, philosophers carefully investigated the philosophy of language. Emphasis was placed on precise definitions and exact grammatical constructions, since the only access we have to concepts is through our linguistic expression of them. Throughout his career, Flew continued to think about his paper, Theology and Falsification, as well as reflect on the many responses that were given to it. The argument in that paper was that theism dies the death of 1,000 qualifications. Theists make claims about God, like that God is love, but then they have to qualify their claims by discounting evidence, such as suffering and evil. In the course of defending a claim like God is love, it is qualified so many times that it becomes meaningless. One of the key responses to Flew's argument was that the tension between the love of God and the existence of evil is precisely what has generated the problem of evil in the first place. Christians are well aware of the difficulty in claiming that God is love in the face of the trouble in this world. Flew's publication, God and Philosophy, was a systematic treatment of atheism. It questions the coherence of the concept of God, offers refutations to traditional theistic arguments, and denies that religious experiences can be proven to come from a transcendent deity. The most original part of the book dealt with the difficulty of actually identifying God. Why think that the definition of God is coherent, or that we can actually know that at different places and times we are identifying the same unchanging being? One decade after God and Philosophy, Flew published The Presumption of Atheism, which argues for the thesis that theists are the ones who need to bear the burden of proof in demonstrating the existence of God. Theists needed to first put forward a coherent definition of God, explain how this being can be identified, and then present adequate evidence for his existence. This book was a methodological starting point, not a conclusion about the existence of God. In a related vein, Flew spent time working on the free will defense and issues of physical determinism. He endorsed compatibilism, but later rejected both compatibilism and absolute physical determinism. He now holds to free will. This change has implications for assessing theistic arguments. Chapter 3. Atheism Calmly Considered. In 2004, after 6 decades of propounding atheism, Flew announced that he had come to believe in the existence of God. He reached this conclusion on the basis of following the evidence wherever it leads. Throughout his career, Flew was interested in many topics, but felt duty-bound to continue to interact in the field of philosophy of religion. He wrote and dialogued, as well as participated in debates with leading Christian philosophers like Richard Swinburne, Alvin Plantinga, William Lane Craig, and Gary Habermas. Over time, Flew began to see that credible arguments could be made for the existence of God. The existence of free will made it impossible for an omnipotent being to predestine that everyone would freely do what was right. This entailed that the existence of evil and suffering did not prove the non-existence of God. What atheism could not explain, however, was the complexity of life. DNA was far too complex to have been generated by chance. Jerry Schrader demonstrated mathematically that the monkey theorem, that a large enough number of monkeys typing for a long enough period of time would eventually produce the works of Shakespeare, was simply absurd. In fact, Schrader demonstrated that the odds of monkeys producing 1 14-line Shakespearean sonnet is exponentially less than 1 in the number of all the particles in the universe. Dawkins' attempts to explain life on the basis of selfish genes likewise failed to adequately explain the complexity and development of all living things. Following the evidence of science leads not to atheism, but to a creator God. Chapter 4. A Pilgrimage of Reason. Presuppositions often make it much more difficult to follow the evidence to its logical conclusion. Atheists often assert that the universe simply began to exist and we should not try to understand how or why this is possible, or that despite the mathematical impossibility, life began and evolved to its present state of complexity. One of the major questions that atheists need to answer is, what would have to occur or to have occurred to constitute for you a reason to at least consider the existence of a superior mind? Science shows us the operation of natural laws and that intelligent and purposeful living beings arose from matter. Nature is incredibly complex, and yet the very existence of nature requires explanation in its own right. These realities of nature point to a designing mind, a source from which life comes. Many scientists disagree with this, but when they do, they no longer speak as scientists, but as philosophers. Frankly, many scientists are not very competent in philosophy and draw unjustifiable conclusions from their data. Using human reason, and not relying on revelation or religious experience, we can see the plausibility of the existence of a supreme deity who created the world. Chapter 5. Who wrote the laws of nature? Although once highly critical of theistic arguments from design, which are really arguments from order to design, Flew came to see that they can be persuasively formulated on the basis of contemporary scientific knowledge. The fact that the universe is ruled by an integrated set of laws is astonishing. Einstein, who many atheists claim was an atheist, but who actually repeatedly denied being an atheist, said on numerous occasions that the order of the universe came from a supreme mind. Einstein was hardly alone in holding his position. Many great scientists of the 20th century likewise believed in a creator of the rational order of the universe. Scientists can study the laws of physics, but these laws and their relationships are already given. They exist. The question is, why do they exist at all? Or why is there not another set of laws in operation? Or why would the laws of nature drive various molecules to combine and form living, conscious beings? Science depends on the existence of laws and regularity in nature, but this order is best explained as the product of a divine mind. Chapter 6. Did the universe know we were coming? Scientists have begun to uncover the incredibly intricate laws that govern the regularity of nature. If numerous values were changed even slightly, life in the universe would be impossible. The improbabilities of such a universe arising by chance are so impossibly remote that the only logical conclusion is that this universe has been finely tuned as a home for living beings. Rather than accept that this conclusion points to the fact that the universe was designed with exquisite precision by a divine mind, some atheists have argued that there are an enormous number of universes, i.e., a multiverse, that exist but are not casually connected. Since there are countless universes, some will have the appearance of being fine-tuned for the existence of intelligent life. There is, however, absolutely no evidence for the multiverse theory. Positing one creator who is casually connected to the universe is far simpler than positing trillions and trillions, or an infinite number, of other universes. Even if the multiverse existed as an ensemble of universes, the fundamental question of order would still need to be answered. In other words, why would such a reality exist, and why would it function according to the laws that govern it? There is no reason to accept the existence of a multiverse, and it is entirely reasonable to believe that fine-tuning entails an intelligent designer. Chapter 7. How did life go live? Many contemporary biologists argue that recent research has demonstrated the possibility of life arising spontaneously from organic matter. Although this may be possible, the statistical probabilities require more time than is provided in the age of the universe for the relevant event to occur. More importantly, biologists have not satisfactorily addressed the question as to how matter can give rise to living things. They need to define what it means to be living. Life is teleological, i.e., directed to goals and ends, but matter is not. How can matter give rise to something that is goal-directed? Darwinism assumes purpose and self-replication, but does not explain how self-replication became possible. The codified information in DNA also represents a tremendous problem for atheism. DNA communicates information through symbols that are translated by messengers to produce biological and chemical effects. There is no explanation for where this complex language came from. How did a linguistic code of information get into matter? Living beings are purpose-driven, and they reach their goals by the workings of a codified language. Matter does not account for information in mind. The explanation for life in this universe is a creating mind. Chapter 8. Did something come from nothing? A cosmological argument begins with the observation that something exists, and then tries to determine the reason why it exists. Big Bang cosmology showed that the universe had a definite beginning, which was uncomfortable for many atheists. Scientists have argued that it is impossible to find a physical cause for the Big Bang, yet many have resisted believing that the cause was God. Some have posited an infinite series of past states of affairs that are casually responsible for the present state of affairs. In this model, every state of affairs is explained by the previous one. Yet this in no way accounts for the existence of the entire series of states of affairs. If a geometry book is copied from a previous one, and that one was copied from a previous one, you could extend the chain back as far as you wanted, but you would never explain why the sequence started or where the information contained in the book came from. The uncaused existence of something as complex as the universe is much less probable than the existence of a simple being like God. Chapter 9. Finding Space for God. In some of his previous publications, Flew had believed that the idea of an incorporeal, omnipresent, personal spirit was incoherent. Many philosophers have argued that a person must be embodied. An unembodied person was impossible. Theists have responded to this challenge with clear defenses of the coherence of a bodiless being. An agent must be capable of intentional action, but no part of the definition of an agent requires that an agent have a body. There is no reason to think that God could not be an incorporeal spirit who exists outside of space and time, yet casually acts in the universe. The notion of casuality is very hard to define, and does not entail that only embodied agents can be causes. Since the idea of a spirit is not incoherent, there is no reason to think that such a being could not be responsible for the creation and existence of the universe. Chapter 10. Open to Omnipotence. Flew has followed the evidence to accept the existence of a self-existent, immutable, immaterial, omnipotent, and omniscient being. The existence of evil in the universe does not overturn the necessity of a creator for the universe. Furthermore, an Aristotelian divine being can create the world but then not intervene in it, or the free will defense can be used to demonstrate that the existence of God and the reality of evil do not generate a contradiction. Although not convinced that any revealed religion is true, Flew acknowledges that once an omnipotent being is believed to exist, it is entirely possible that he has revealed himself to human beings. Flew denies having any religious experience, but is open to the possibility. Copyright 2014, Books at a Glance. Books at a Glance book summaries are available by subscription only, and except for brief quotes, may not be reproduced, in whole or in part, without express written permission.